Hello and welcome to the second Charlie and Hannah film podcast. Hannah, how are you today?
I am doing just great. It's a new year, new set of films. I'm very excited.
I don't suppose that over the long holidays we just took, your taste in film got any better than it has been.
It is as good as it's ever been, just as I'm sure yours is too, Charlie.
Well, just a reminder, last week on our first show, we did the top 10 films of 2015. Hannah told me her top 10, and I told her how just wrong she was, and I gave her my top 10, and she gave me equal feedback. So this week, we thought we would do the top 10 worst films of 2015, and this is actually kind of a controversial thing to do. A lot of people don't do top 10 worst films, because, you know, who are we to say what's worst? I didn't go out last year and make a movie.
No, and that's why I did a top 14 last week, if you'll recall.
I do recall, and sometimes it was top 16 and top 19.
Could be.
But just, you know, to be nice, it's not a top 10 worst, it's a top 5 worst. And, you know, there's a lot of movies I didn't like last year, but there are 5 films I thought were cruel and unusual. It's those films where they're making the movie and you're just asking yourself, you know this is going to be terrible. Why are you doing this?
Well, except for me, I actually went into some of them with a higher expectation, and they were so bad, and that's why it was so much more disappointing, because it was way worse than even I could have expected. But I'm very proud of myself. I actually think I skipped a lot of the worst movies this year, and so if you don't hear them on my list, it's because I was smart enough not to bother to go see them in the first place.
See, I do not stay away from movies that everyone tells me is already terrible, because I use it as a palate reset. If I see an awful movie, it makes me really appreciate the good stuff. You know, like in award season, everything you see is amazing, top tier, fantastic, and it blends together. How can you say one movie is superior to another movie? But when you see some of the movies we're about to talk about, you can automatically just appreciate the good stuff more.
That's true, although I have found that every once in a while, some of the movies that are peppered throughout the year that aren't just award season movies, I actually like more, because I think the award season movies tend to be much more depressing and overbearing. And so sometimes I like those good popcorn movies that come out in March and April and May especially.
And that is why we all recognized your top 10 list was full of safe sequels.
It was full of fun stuff.
Of course. Pardon my synonym.
That's right.
So kick us off, Hannah. What was your number 5 worst movie of 2015?
So I think my number 5 goes to I guess it was supposed to be sort of a female buddy movie of sorts called Hot Pursuit. Do you remember that one, Charlie?
I remember that, and I did not see it because I was probably doing anything else that night.
Ah, see? Okay, well, this one was this lukewarm comedy. It tried very hard to be funny. It was with Academy Award winner Reese Witherspoon, who you would hope would have taken on a very strong comedy role, and Modern Family sexpot Sofia Vergara. So the acting in this one actually was not so bad. It was the script that failed them. It was bad.
I'm only judging by the previews, and that's absolutely judging a book by its cover, but good Lord, it looked bad.
Well, yes. And it was definitely one of those ones where whatever you might have seen that was funny in the trailer pretty much maxed out what was funny in the film. And it couldn't have come at a worse time also for police relations in this country. And so it certainly did not do anything for our men and women in blue, because it really did make the police officer who was played by Reese Witherspoon look like a real idiot.
I'm going to guess that the current state between police and their respective communities might have been better served by a movie, say, like Straight Outta Compton.
Possibly. They certainly are very different. But yes, even if I had to choose between Hot Pursuit and Straight Outta Compton, I'd go Compton all the way.
All right. Well, thanks for the warning for Hot Pursuit. My number 5, let's see. Oh, is a tie. My first tie.
Oh, that, come on.
I know. What, so it's really a top 6.
You know, no ties.
Because you're going to see the theme is very similar. They are sequels and reboots. It is a tie between two action films, Taken 3 and The Transporter Refueled. Did you see either of those?
I skipped both. And I must just make a slight objection here, though, that I believe you mocked me when I did a tie in order to stay within a certain theme last week.
I didn't realize I would stumble into a tie here, but it's so appropriate in this case. Taken 3, the original Taken was amazing. It came out of nowhere. It wasn't supposed to be this phenomenon that it turned out to be. Liam Neeson's daughter gets kidnapped in Paris. He gets on the phone. I have a certain set of skills. I'm going to kill you. And he goes over, and you know what? He's a man of his word. He killed them all, and he got his daughter back. Taken 2 was awful. He goes to Turkey. She gets kidnapped again. Same chick. Got to go through the whole thing again. Okay, got her back. Taken 3. All right, they don't leave the country this time. They're in the United States. They frame him for the murder of his wife. They kill off the wife. He gets blamed, and now Forrest Whitaker has to track him down. Boo.
Well, it's one of those fool me once, shame on me. And so I enjoyed Taken. I did not so much enjoy Taken 2. And I was smart enough not to go and see Taken 3.
I didn't go see it either. I rented it.
Okay.
So there. And the other one, The Transporter Refueled, is actually, you could call it The Transporter 4. They got rid of Jason Statham. The only good thing about The Transporter, I actually didn't like the first three Transporter movies. I thought they were too silly to be taken seriously. He's a driver who will transport anything, and he's got a set of rules. I'll never look in the bag. Well, he always looks in the bag, and something happens. And so this time, they got rid of Jason Statham, and they brought in this guy named Ed Skrein. So if you haven't heard of him, you never will, because no one liked The Transporter Refueled. It's really a car commercial, this time about, I guess it's Audi. It's an Audi car commercial, and it takes place on the French Riviera. He's going to clean up the prostitution in this town, and he breaks all of his rules, and he gets taken hot. It's just a mess. And there's a common denominator between Taken 3 and The Transporter Refueled, and it's Luc Besson. He was the genius behind The Fifth Element, Taken, and just a dozen other wonderful action films. And now he just produces garbage upon garbage, and he's rebooting and sequelizing his previous work to his detriment, I think.
Well, even though I very often like the movies that you hate, I think I'm going to take you at your word on these two and skip them and just once again say, hey, skip those particular sequels and go see Furious 7.
See, seeing The Transporter Fueled and Taken 3 will make you appreciate Fury 7 even more than you already did.
Absolutely.
All right, Hannah, your number 4.
My number 4 is somewhere on my list here. It is a movie called American Ultra. Did you see American Ultra?
I did, and I liked it.
Oh. Then I'm sorry I didn't put it higher on my list. But I could not, this movie was a hot mess. I could not figure out what it wanted to be. The only thing that I can recall coming out of that movie is that we got a free promotional ramen noodles, which I finally threw out because I was afraid perhaps it was poisoned.
I ate mine.
And?
I liked it. It tastes like ramen noodles.
Okay, so obviously it wouldn't kill me. But this movie had Kristen Stewart, who actually, you know, I have no problems with her. Some people do not like her. I did like the Twilight movies, which I'm sure comes as no surprise to you. But it also starred, who was
that was Jesse Eisenberg.
Jesse Eisenberg, who I also actually generally like. But this movie was just weird. And it was some sort of spy movie. Guy's been brainwashed, forgets that he's in the CIA, and he's an operative, and she's an operative, and nobody knows they're operatives, and he seems like he's just a stoned-out store clerk, and I don't even remember much else about it other than the fact that I came out of that movie going, I have no idea what this movie wanted to be.
I remember I gave it a middle-of-the-road score. I didn't hate it. I didn't love it, but I thought it was okay. I liked the relationship between Kristen Stewart and Jesse Eisenberg. They seemed to really take their time and make you believe these two really cared about each other. I hated the villain. It was played by Topher Grace. He was campy. He was silly, kind of like a cartoon. The violence was...
Oh, right.
It wasn't really over the top, but it was up there.
It was up there.
A lot of explosions. The convenience store exploded.
That's right.
He killed a couple of people with hammers, I think. And John Leguizamo, do you remember him? He was the drug dealer.
Yes, yes.
And they hid in his neon blacklit basement, and he was just, it's, you know, John Leguizamo does weird stuff, but this was up there.
This whole movie was just weird, and so I put it on my list there because when something is just weird and then I can't say anything more about it, then it pretty much goes on my most disappointing slash worst list of the year.
Well, I hesitate to know what's your 3, 2, and 1, because American Ultra is not that bad compared to the other stuff we're
going
to talk
about. Again, I told you I skipped a lot of the really, really, really bad ones, and when I heard they were bad, I did not go out of my way to go see them.
Okay. Well, my number 4 is Mordecai. Did you have the pleasure of this Citizen Kane?
That is one of those ones where I saw the trailer, I was busy the night of the screening, and I skipped it, and everybody told me I was the smartest person that week for missing it.
Well, if I told you you were going into a movie blind, but it starred Johnny Depp, Gwyneth Paltrow, Paul Bettany, and Ewan McGregor, you might think, oh man, this is going to be good. Those actors, they wouldn't stoop to something so low. However.
Yes.
So I think this group of people lost a bet, and this was their penance. Mordecai, Charlie Mordecai, by the way, is his name, is a dandy, a fop, kind of a lazy art collector slash spy. I guess he's a spy because he has to go and steal a painting that might lead people to stolen Nazi gold. It's befuddling. Okay. There's nothing going on here. Depp does accents, especially, you know, Jack Sparrow, which is a very successful accent of his. Well, he tries on this, you know, nouveau riche, French-British conglomeration accent, which is just atrocious. And he's got this waxy long mustache that is a running joke that goes nowhere. And Gwyneth Paltrow is kind of, you know, the wears the pants in the family, which is all supposed to be funny. And none of it's funny. This should be number one on everyone's list, but I really honestly don't remember enough about it to make it number one. It was so bad.
Well, maybe Johnny Depp knew that he'd have a little bit of redemption coming his way with Black Mass, because even though that particular movie I did not love, I thought his performance was phenomenal.
I didn't love Black Mass either, but compared to Mordecai, you know, he can only hope people forget this ever existed.
Okay, I've already forgotten.
All right, Hannah, number 3.
Number 3, you may have seen, I think we talked about it before, but Jupiter Ascending with Mila Kunis and Channing Tatum and Eddie Redmayne. With that, again, with that cast, you would expect something pretty special. And this movie was, again, bizarre. It was one of these outer space movies, and Eddie Redmayne affects some really bizarre alien accent that was delivered so flat, and you're just like, this is Eddie Redmayne, and he was coming off of, you know, Les Mis and Theory of Everything, and it was before The Danish Girl this year, which was a great performance. So this one actually had me questioning my love for Eddie Redmayne, at least for 20 minutes on that particular day. And again, it was just a very strange movie and a real waste of some really good eye candy in Channing Tatum and Mila Kunis.
It also starred Channing Tatum's flying shoes, if you remember those. I was really looking forward to Jupiter Ascending. It's from the Wachowskis, who brought us the Matrix trilogy. They know how to make science fiction original creative films. And this Jupiter Ascending was not original creative, and it was not good. I did not hate it as much as you did, but I certainly did not like it. Eddie Redmayne got a lot of attention for what he did. He tried something. It did not work. It didn't work at all. But I applaud him for trying something different. He really tried to go over-the-top villain, and he failed in every way imaginable. But I applaud him for trying. And, yeah, I don't want to really go over the plot, because it's really convoluted.
It was very convoluted.
They're really, really old. They're trying to be immortal. They own planets, and they're going to destroy Earth. She's a cleaning lady, but a queen. It's atrocious plot. It can be kind of good looking at times.
Absolutely. And again, I don't hate any of these movies, because I feel that if it got to this stage, it's got a redeeming quality for somebody out there. And who am I to completely judge? So again, there aren't many movies that I can actually say I really hated. These veer towards, I would call them my really, 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 really most disappointing waste of my time movies of the year.
Nah, see, we disagree. Everything on my list, I hate. I hope I never see him again.
I'm not a hater, Charlie.
Oh, I hate everything about a lot of things. Especially the number three on my list, The Boy Next Door, starring Jennifer Lopez. Did you have a chance to check this one out?
I don't think I did. No, I did not see it. I remember when it came out, again, I just missed it and realized that it was okay that I missed it.
The Lifetime Channel would turn this thing down. Kristen Chenoweth, by the way, pops up as her best friend. I don't know why. And so Jennifer Lopez is a school teacher. Her husband recently cheats on her, is not in the house right now, but he's trying to win her back. And new boy moves in next door, and he's good looking, and he must work out 23 hours a day, and he never wears a shirt. So, of course, one night she's feeling vulnerable, and they do certain tasks. And then the next day, Monday morning, hey, you have a new student. Look who it is. Oh, it's the boy next door. And it turns out he is a raging psychopath. Yeah. And is saying, I'm going to tell the world if you don't keep seeing me. And I'm going to kill some people, too. And this kid does not look 17, 18. I mean, this kid looks older than me, and I'm losing my hair. You know? This movie, it was number one on my list for a long time until I just sat down and think, you know what, it's not worth it to be my number one because it didn't take itself seriously.
Wow. Well, and that is a perfect example also of one where I saw the plot line and that was enough. I thought this is going to be a really stupid movie. It had absolutely, there was just nothing that appealed to me that even made me want to go see it at all. So I didn't.
I hope folks take heed and have the same opinion as you on this one, Hannah.
Yes.
All right, Hannah, your number two.
My number two, Vacation. This was a huge, huge disappointment to me. I remember the original. I love the original, the first one. I was all excited to see what would happen when they brought out Chevy Chase in this one. And I just found this to be the most sophomoric stupid movie of the year, and so disappointing because I had very, very high hopes based again on seeing the trailer. Very funny stuff made me go into that movie thinking it was going to be just a fun, mindless entertainment movie, and instead I could not wait for that movie to end.
Yeah, I didn't like it. I didn't hate it. It was very disappointing. I remember the first one, obviously, and they bring back Chevy Chase and Beverly D'Angelo, and they waste them. They
totally
get nothing to do.
Them.
It's a sequel, but it's also a reboot because Ed Helms plays Rusty, and Rusty was, you know, the son in all the previous films. The car has a bunch of jokes, just like the original car, the family truckster.
Right.
This time it's an Albanian rental. The Chris Hemsworth shows up with an abnormally protruding appendage, I believe.
Oh, that's right. Even Chris Hemsworth couldn't redeem this movie for me.
They take a mud bath, which it's all over the previews, and I think that was the best part of the movie. So the previews kind of ruined that for everybody because it got, you know. And Christina Applegate was in it, and she didn't do anything very memorable at all. And the jokes were flat. Their kids are awful.
Yeah, yeah. It was just stupid because the first one, you still felt something for the family, and I remember feeling a certain sense of kinship with the kids on this road trip with the family. You know, I remember being stuffed in the back seat of the car between my brothers and having no control over your destination and how you were getting there, and that could also be very funny. But this movie took all the funny out of all these situations and turn them into really just disgusting and weird stunts that I don't think worked.
You make a good point there. I remember I used to root for the Griswolds.
Yes.
I wanted them to get to Wally World.
Exactly.
And this time, Rusty's recreating that trip. They're going to Wally World again, and they just can't get there because of everything in their way. And remember when they stop at the Four Corners and that whole episode?
Yes, with the cops. That
one was halfway funny.
Some of it was halfway funny. But even in the theater, the lights went out. Or not the lights went out, but
They came on, I remember.
The lights came on, and the film stopped. Maybe there was a fire alarm or something. We all exited the theater, and only half the people came back.
I think you're right about that. And I remember saying, this might be the best part of the film.
Exactly. I think it was the best part of the film, was actually getting a break in the middle of it.
Well, Vacation is the best picture you've ever seen compared to my number two,
okay,
which is Jim and the Holograms.
I skipped that one, too.
based on the 1980s cartoon, which you know everyone was screaming they would turn into a live-action film, these plucky small-town girls hit it big overnight when their music video goes viral on the web. They get signed by Juliette Lewis. Their foster mother is Molly Ringwald.
Wow. And 16 Candles all over again.
So they have to be anonymous. No one knows who Jerrica, a.k.a. Jim, is. And there's a subplot with a sci-fi robot that her deceased father built for her to explain further truths in the future when she could figure out how to put together the robot. And they have to, it turns out Juliette Lewis is not on the up and up, so they have to.
Shocking.
They have to produce and create their music, you know, without the evil record, evil queen over the shoulder. And of course, her son is the love interest. And what an awful film. I think it actually holds the record for widest release, couple thousand screens, and it made about $20.
How was the music?
I don't remember. It was so bad.
Well, because even my 11-year-old niece, who's probably among the target audience for this, did not seem all that impressed. And so that to me was a telling sign about that. And yeah, I just never had any desire to go see that one either.
I remember Jim and the Holograms from when I was a kid, and no one really liked it then.
Well, and you're younger, so that was before my time, but after my time, it was after my time.
And what a waste. We finally get Molly Ringwald's back. She's in a movie with Juliette Lewis. You don't see these actresses very much anymore.
Yeah.
And they show up in Jim and the Holograms.
That is sad because, you know, to me, Molly Ringwald is the Breakfast Club, and that is a classic.
She's Claire the Princess from the Breakfast Club.
You know, you have a steel trap mind, Charlie. I'm glad you remember all these details because I rely on you to actually come up with them when I'm hemming and hawing about what a movie was and who's in it and who directed it.
You know, The Breakfast Club taught me life lessons, and Jim and the Holograms stole a piece of my soul.
Wow. I think you should put that on a t-shirt and trademark it.
I think I bet a couple people out there would buy that t-shirt. All right, Hannah, blow my mind. The number one worst movie of the year.
The number one worst movie of the year was one of the first movies of the year that I think I saw, and it was called The Lazarus Effect.
Mm.
Do you remember The Lazarus Effect?
I saw it, actually.
It had Olivia Wilde, and it was some kind of zombie movie. She was injected with something and comes back to life, and the whole thing looked like one of those movies that a bunch of college students got together in a lab and shot, and somebody said, hey, I've got this famous, you know, friend, Olivia Wilde. If I can get her to star in this, then this movie will get made. And it did. And so I felt like she was doing a favor for somebody. This movie was just gross and strange and creepy and I don't know. Did not like it. My worst movie of the year.
It reminded me of Flatliners, but not as intentional. Somebody dies, and the person is so distraught that she died, they bring her back, because they'd been practicing on, I guess, cats and dogs, how to bring cats and dogs back from the dead. So they bring this person back to life, and the person wakes up, was I dead? And what could have been an interesting movie,
yeah,
telling us, what is death, where did you go, and what happened? This person just starts killing people.
Yeah.
And your boy Donald Glover is in it from The Martian.
Oh, right.
And Mark Duplass is in it. And there are some names in this movie, but it's this 80-90 minute horror thing that's not scary. People just, you know, they die awkward deaths. There's some blood, and it's just stupid.
It was just stupid, and I didn't understand where it was going. You're right. It had a really good possible premise and didn't know what to do with it. And in the end, this movie just was horrible.
Hmm. It's not perhaps the worst horror movie of the year. We might get to that later, but it's certainly up there.
Well, and considering, as you know, I never see horror movies, for me to have actually seen this one and then for it to be as bad as it was, it really soured me on any potential horror movies for the rest of the year.
Come back to us, Hannah. We'll bring you back.
We'll see.
All right, brace yourself.
Okay, you're number one.
The number one worst movie of the year. It's just mean. It's Chappie.
Did not see Chappie.
Chappie is from Neil Blomkamp. He's South African. Remember, in 2009, he brought us District 9.
Uh-huh,
District 9
excellent.
Was actually nominated for Best Picture. So people were looking forward to this. And this was not a sequel, but it was a District 9 knockoff. It was actually, you know who should be mad is anyone who made Short Circuit 2. You remember Johnny Five from Short Circuit? Steve Guttenberg goes, Johnny Five alive.
I know Steve Guttenberg from like what, Police Squad or Police Academy, whatever TV show he was in. But yeah, sorry.
Well, there was this movie called Short Circuit, and it had this robot named Johnny Five, and he just liked to learn. And, you know, well, there's a part in Short Circuit 2 where the bad guys take some crowbars to Johnny Five, and they beat him to a pulp for a good, you know, 20, 30 seconds. They're killing Johnny Five. Kids in the audience are screaming, don't hurt Johnny Five. What are you doing? You know, worst part of the movie. Chappie is 2 hours and change of that 30-second scene in Short Circuit 2. It's torture. It's sadistic. It's got Dev Patel, Hugh Jackman, Sigourney Weaver. They're creating the world's first artificial intelligence. And this movie's pretending to examine the idea of the world's first artificial intelligence and its personification as this spry robot toddler. He's kind of a toddler. He doesn't know how to walk very well. He's learning how to talk. No, the battle lines are actually between gangsters and devious defense contractors trying to make money. And the violence against this toddler, he does not understand why people are hitting him with crowbars and setting him on fire. It's mean. It's unpleasant. I walked out of the movie theater just hating movies for a good time after. They're like, why would someone make something so cruel?
Yeah, I don't understand it when those movies do get made, and especially when they're actually cast with people that you would just expect more from, and you wonder why they don't in the middle of the movie just go, let's pull the plug, this thing sucks.
I know there are some people out there that really, they like Chappie, and I don't know why. I don't get it. It stars a rap group from South Africa, Die Antwoord, Ninja and Yolandi, and they actually go by their own names. And Ninja goes a long way to corrupting Chappie. And they think it's funny when Chappie's walking and talking like a gangster, but I'm like, you know, this is not how you raise a child. So that is my worst film of the year.
Okay.
But I have some, before we get to our next segment, I have some honorable mentions I want to throw by you, see
I
if
think
you've
you're cheating,
seen. No, just
but that's
honorable
okay.
mentions.
Go ahead.
Well, I had an original top 10 list, but yeah. We had, you know, you had a good idea to pare it down to five. But these are just honorable mentions.
Yes.
Anything starring Adam Sandler, including The Cobbler and The Ridiculous Six.
Okay, I did not see either of those. I have seen some things with Adam Sandler that I do like, so he's hit or miss for me. You know, something like The Wedding Singer is, and I think 50 First Dates.
Both over a decade old, both of them.
Okay. So when he does go back to some of those genres, then I think he'll be better. But yes, when it's something that just looks stupid from the get-go, it generally is.
Well, we're going to see Adam Sandler a lot only on Netflix. He made a deal with Netflix for, I think, four or six films, and the first one is The Ridiculous Six, and it stars a lot of well-known people, a lot of Saturday Night Live alums, and it's he plays the straight guy in a comedy, and the rest play the buffoons, and it's just awful.
Wow.
Two horror films, one we've already talked about, The Lazarus Effect, the other, The Gallows.
Missed that one, too.
Kids break into a high school, and a high school play kind of reenacts itself, and people start hanging from the rafters by a noose. It's, you know, The Gallows.
Yeah, good times.
And three sequels. Ted 2.
Skipped it.
The Divergent series Insurgent.
Liked it.
And Magic Mike XXL.
Liked it a lot.
Oh, man. First Magic Mike wasn't that bad, but Magic Mike XXL was really bad.
Oh, I think you were just looking at it for all the wrong reasons. I think it was exactly what it needed to be. It was not as good as the first one because it was not a real fresh premise anymore. But it was a good Saturday night with the gals, escape, have a few drinks, and go see a movie. It delivered what it needed to deliver.
I have no doubt it did, Anna.
I think Channing Tatum is so incredibly talented. I even liked him in White House Down. I think, is that the one he was in?
I don't know. I saw the other one, Olympus Has Fallen,
White House Down. But it was in White House Down, and I just think he's just a very appealing, watchable guy. And
you're close to saying the word dreamy. Is he dreamy,
Hannah?
He's a
little dreamy. He's kind of dreamy, and so I did not think it was as good as the first one. But I thought it was actually in some ways more popcorn entertainment than the first one. You just had to enjoy the ride and not take it for anything more than that.
No, trust me, I didn't take it for anything.
And wait, what was the other one that I...
Insurgent.
I really don't remember much about it.
There's a reason.
but it really was fine for what it's meant to be. It's sort of a little bit like the Hunger Games light, is how I tend to refer to them.
You mean kind of Hunger Games theft?
Hunger Games light, and I thought Insurgent was fine. I have not read the books, and I just liked the movie. I didn't love it. I didn't hate it.
Fair enough. Well, we still have two more of those on the way, including one coming up in March.
Okay.
All right, our next segment, we wanted to talk about our most disappointing films of the year. Not films we hated, films we were really looking forward to. Maybe great actors, great directors, and we saw them, and, ugh, you did this with that? How disappointing. Hannah, tell me some of your biggest disappointments.
Well, just sort of dovetailing off what we were just talking about, one of the biggest disappointments for me was actually that final Hunger Games Mockingjay Part 2. I did not like the third book. I read all the books in the series. I liked one the best. I liked two okay. I did not like three. It was the same thing with the movies. And I somehow hoped that they would do something with that movie to actually go away from where the book took you and make it a better movie than it was book. And they did not. I found it just a disappointing end to the franchise. I love Jennifer Lawrence. I love a lot of the characters, but I felt everyone, all the supporting characters really got short shrift in that final movie, and it was just a disappointing conclusion for me.
It was impossible for The Hunger Games Mockingjay Part 2 to disappoint me, because I knew it was going to be bad. Not as bad as Part 1 was, but...
Oh, Part 1 was excellent.
Oh, my God.
I love Part 1.
It was 2 hours
book.
It could have been a 5-minute prologue to Part 2, what Part 1 could have been.
I love the book, and I love the movie for the first one. I loved what they did with the characters. I thought it read like a screenplay when I read that first book. So, yes, we'll just have to agree to disagree on the series as a whole, but definitely it was a disappointing Part 2 conclusion.
My favorite line of dialogue from 2015 is in Part 2, and it's my favorite because it's the worst thing ever probably said by an actor. It's towards the beginning. Gale leans into Katniss, gives her a kiss, and he says, "It doesn't count. It's like kissing a drunk person." Way to go, brother.
That was probably one of my favorite scenes of those movies. I don't know.
Liam Hemsworth, you got
Liam
away
Hemsworth
with the words.
Liam Hemsworth is cute. And the whole PETA, Gale, Katniss love triangle. They took something out of... They were missing the soul even of that third book in this movie. And for anyone who's read the book and knows the death scene of the sister Prim, I did not feel any emotion whatsoever when they killed her off in this movie. Whereas
spoilers.
Spoiler alert. Whereas when I was reading the book, I was probably welling up. And it was a much more powerful read than this movie was able to portray. And it was just a sad way to end for me.
Yeah, it was more powerful in the book. It got short shrift here. But you know what? That entire series was just... they could have done better. One of my biggest disappointments, it was Aloha from Cameron Crowe. This guy, I love Cameron Crowe. He brought us Say Anything, Elizabeth Town, which a lot of people didn't like, but I loved. Almost Famous, and one of my top three movies of all time, Singles, which I just love that movie. So I'm thinking, oh my gosh, a new Cameron Crowe movie in Hawaii, Bradley Cooper, Emma Stone. This is going to be great. It's called Aloha. Oh no, what a bad movie. And maybe it's because I was in the Air Force and I don't know things about the Air Force, and he just happens to be this guy who can crash satellites with a keyboard, and she's Emma Stone's playing a half Asian, I guess, and man, they took a lot of heat for that. And it's just a silly nothing movie.
Well, I did not see that one. Again, everyone was talking about how disappointing it was, and I'd missed the screening. And I just never had any reason to go and seek it out, despite this phenomenal cast. So when I heard how disappointed everyone whose opinions I do trust were in this movie...
I see what you're saying.
Then even I stayed away from it, so I'm not surprised to find it on your list. It probably would have been on mine, too, had I seen it.
Do you have other disappointments?
But yes, in fact, coming off of that one, speaking of George Clooney, my big disappointment was with Tomorrowland, which I just thought was going to be something special. This Disney movie with George Clooney, and it had a really nice message going for it, and it went nowhere. I just thought it dragged and did not work, and that was a huge disappointment because I had high hopes going into that one.
I did not have high hopes for this, but I understand. Yeah, I agree with you. Tomorrowland was not a good movie, but I didn't think it was going to be good because it's based on a section of Disney World. They wrote a movie about a section of Disney World.
Pirates of the Caribbean, come on.
Loved Pirates of the Caribbean.
And that was based on a ride, so come on.
No, but I just didn't expect too much from this movie, and it delivered. It barely brought me anything.
It delivered, but it's like it had George Clooney. I expected it to deliver good in at least some redeeming way where I could at least feel good about saying, but George was excellent. But the movie just could not live up to any of the expectations, and in the end, it was just flat.
Well, my second biggest disappointment was Irrational Man, the new Woody Allen. Woody Allen does me a favor. He creates a movie every single year, and he's been doing that for, 40 years. And lately, he's been on a hot streak. Midnight in Paris was my favorite film from 2011. He did recently Vicky Cristina Barcelona, To Rome with Love, Blue Jasmine, and this time we got Irrational Man. Joaquin Phoenix is this liberal arts college philosophy professor. Emma Stone is the student he's sleeping with. And no, it's, Woody Allen's failed us in the past. You can't create 45 movies in 45 years and just not have some misses. And this was not one of his biggest misses. He's had a lot worse, but this was just a miss.
He's always been hit or miss for me, and so when I saw what this movie was about too, I kind of suspected it would go in my miss category. I like the one on the tennis one. What was that? Match Point.
And that's Match already Point. Like 10 years old.
That's See? About 10 years See, old I'm already. A little behind on my Woody Allen movies. I did like Midnight in Paris. But The Irrational Man just didn't look like I would like it, and now I'm glad I didn't see it.
No, you didn't miss anything.
And let's see if there's anything else on my list. Going back to one that I really had high hopes for was Ricky and the Flash. Meryl Streep. You figure who can screw up a Meryl Streep movie? Well, and not to mention Rick Springfield, Jesse's girl. I love Rick Springfield. Watched him in General Hospital for many, many years.
I bet you had a Rick Springfield poster on your wall.
I probably did have a Rick Springfield poster. I can sing Jesse's girl, and I actually know all of his songs, probably all
he
six
has more
of them.
Songs?
Yeah, there's probably like six of them. I even saw him at the Orange County Fair in California a few years back. And so I think he's an okay actor. And Meryl Streep, of course, is Meryl Streep. They both have musical talent. But this movie just, I don't know, it was bad. It was just bad. And you go, how can Meryl Streep do bad? And she did. This one is just bad.
You're saying Ricky and the Flash is not Sophie's Choice.
Ricky and the Flash is a flash in the pan, and then you throw it out.
Love your wordplay.
Does that make any sense? I don't know.
Another one of my disappointing films was Black Hat, the new Michael Mann film. Michael Mann did Miami Vice and Collateral, so okay, I like Michael Mann films. Here comes Chris Hemsworth as a hacker. They spring him out of jail because he's the only guy who can stop the really bad hackers out there, and oh no. No, it's just not. He is not the hacker with a heart of gold. It becomes silly. There's some gunplay, even though they fight through keyboards. And I think it takes place in China. And no.
I might have to check that one out because, I do like a good Michael Mann movie. They're usually crowd pleasers. So maybe someday if it's on a plane.
It had style because Michael Mann has a lot of style. Yeah. And I like the concept. Movies about hackers can be good. Movies about computers are notoriously tough to make because there's only so much you can do filming a guy typing intently into a computer screen. But no, there's just too little going on here.
Okay.
In Black Hat, which really flew under the radar. A lot of people didn't see Black Hat the company released Black Hat, I think, around the same week as Mordecai, like in January, where no one was paying attention. That's your first clue.
Okay. Well, then I'll just wrap mine up with, I think, in terms of animated disappointments, Minions, the Minion movie, and the Peanuts movie, neither one of those really grabbed me at all. I found them kind of dull. The Minion characters make great supporting characters in the Despicable Me movies, but I think this movie went, you know, just showed you the difference between what I call a leading Minion and a supporting Minion. And they are just better as supporting characters, and they could not keep this movie together.
I agree. Minions was terrible. They don't deserve a full film. Minions should be in 10-minute, like, Looney Tunes shorts.
Right.
No, that was a terrible movie. But I did like the Peanuts movie better than you did. I think it's a perfect maybe first film, second film for a young guy. And it broke no new ground. I've seen all the stories before, the kite-eating tree and the ice skating and Charlie Brown, You Can't Do Anything Right, and Lucy, Psychiatrist, 5 Cents. The whole thing, it's all there. Nothing's changed.
It's just a long version of the Peanuts special that you can see on TV.
And I'm fine with that because Peanuts is so good. I'll watch that every year.
But it was too long. I was ready to go. After a half hour, I could have been after an hour, definitely. And going into that 90 minutes, I just thought it was too long.
Fair enough. We'll agree about Minions but disagree about the Peanuts movie.
All right.
Now, the Golden Globe Awards are this Sunday. They're voted on by the Hollywood Foreign Press, not...
Who?
The Hollywood Foreign Press, they are not, you know, Academy Awards voters. A lot of people say this predicts the Academy Awards, and well, it doesn't. The Hollywood Foreign Press are, there's not that many of them. There might be 90 of them, and they're notoriously goofy because they just like to have a good party, and they separate their categories into drama and comedy, and they're, you know, no one really respects them, but everyone watches them because they're fun to watch. It's just
and they're
silly.
Drinking during the awards
and they're
ceremony,
they're all getting hammered,
which
in that crowd.
I'm sort of doing right now, not getting hammered, but you know, I think there is something to be said for having a glass of wine while you are going through watching 3 hours of people presenting awards.
Oh, 3 hours must be on the short end of that, Hannah. But I wanted to know, I looked at all the categories and all the nominations, Hannah, what you were most happy to see pop up in their nominations.
I think in the Best Motion Picture, I'm happiest to see Room and Spotlight there. I think the other three, Carol, Mad Max Fury Road, and The Revenant, are all offbeat choices. None of them... I didn't love any of those three. I liked them fine, but they were not, to me, Best Pictures. Room and Spotlight, I think, just deserve to... I don't think either of those will necessarily win. But I'm glad they're there. But can I tell you my most bizarre category?
No, please go ahead.
This whole idea of this motion picture musical or comedy and putting, here's the best actress. I mean, Jennifer Lawrence for Joy. Ooh. That is not a musical or a comedy.
Nobody laughed.
Melissa McCarthy for Spy. I mean, that one, okay, I can go for that. Amy Schumer in Trainwreck. Yeah, comedy. Okay, we're in the right category. Maggie Smith for The Lady in the Van. Nobody's seen that yet.
No, it comes out in about 2 weeks.
Yeah, so it's as much as everyone loves Maggie Smith, it's like, I don't know, is that real? I don't see her as a comedy category person, but we'll see. And Lily Tomlin, this is not one of her comedic roles at all.
No.
It's a dry wit to this movie, Grandma, that she's in. But this category is just fundamentally flawed. And same for the pictures that were nominated. Joy is not a comedy.
No.
I don't get it. So I just don't understand. And The Martian is a great movie. You'll recall it's my number one movie of the year. But it is not a musical or a comedy. It is a smart, witty drama. And that does not compute in this category at all. And I would have actually liked to see The Martian in the Best Motion Picture category for drama.
Well, I agree with you. The Best Motion Picture, Musical, or Comedy doesn't make any sense. The worst category by far, you found it, is the Best Actress category. That's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you have your, you call them offbeat. I think you have that inverted. I think Room and Spotlight are the offbeat nominations, while the other three are the expected ones.
That's true.
Fury Road was the darling of the year. Everyone loved it. It was on everyone's top 10 list. And The Revenant, you know, everyone's exclaiming about it just this week, so they are not offbeat.
They're not offbeat. They're not my favorite, so therefore they're wrong.
Well, my favorite, what I was happiest to see in their nominations this year comes in the Best Actress Drama category, mm-hmm. to see Rooney Mara for Carol and Alicia Vikander for The Danish Girl. Everyone's been putting Rooney Mara as a Best Supporting Actress, and she's not. She actually, I think, has more screen time than Cate Blanchett, and the story's told through her point of view. She is the best actress of that film, and Alicia Vikander was much more pronounced than Eddie Redmayne in The Danish Girl, so I'm really happy to see both of those girls pop up in the Best Actress Drama category. But the one that I just, the nomination that blows my mind comes from the Best Original Song category. Writings on the Wall by Sam Smith from the new James Bond movie Spectre might be the worst Bond song ever.
Oh, you knew it would be there,
it's
though.
It's so bad.
Oh, it's okay.
We had
it's
Skyfall okay. a couple years ago by Adele. You know, the one before that by Chris Cornell wasn't that bad. But this piece of garbage, it just ruined the first couple minutes of the film. Because it's like, oh, stop wailing, Sam Smith, and move on.
I know you're rooting for Love Me Like You Do from 50 Shades of Grey, that you'd rather that win over
I like
Sam
that
Smith.
Song. That is Ellie Goulding. And you know what? When she says Love Me Like You Do, I want to.
Oh, and what about, but come on, See You Again, Furious 7, the little tribute to Paul Walker.
A good song. Wiz Khalifa. Yeah. Absolutely a good song.
I don't remember Simple Song in Youth, so I'm going to have to go.
That was the classical song that Michael Caine was performing at the end.
I didn't
make it to the end. There you go.
I didn't make it to the end, so bad on me. But yeah, the Best Actress category is actually going to be a really tough call, because I think they were all very good, and I'm just excited to now know the correct pronunciation of Saoirse Ronan's name.
Mm. I can't wait till, because that category is going to be announced at the end, so whoever's been drinking and has to say that name is going to screw it up.
Hopefully it's not John Travolta.
All right, well, to wrap up our show this week, there's a new movie out this week. It's hitting 3,000 screens. You've heard all about it. You've seen the previews, starring Leonardo DiCaprio, who actually doesn't have a lot of words to say. He grunts a lot. Is The Revenant, based on a semi-true story, 1823, Western South Dakota. These fur trappers who are pillaging the land and bringing disease are attacked by a tribe of Native Americans. Leonardo DiCaprio is leading a band of survivors back to the fort. He gets mauled savagely by a grizzly bear. A very long time. They think he's going to die. He's not dead yet. So they leave a couple guys behind, including Fitzgerald, a very nefarious villain played by Tom Hardy. And he doesn't die. They leave him for dead. He crawls and scrapes himself back to civilization for about 2.5 hours.
Yes.
Hannah, what did you think about The Revenant?
I thought it was a beautifully shot movie.
I like how you say that.
The opening scene reminded me of the opening of Saving Private Ryan, where I basically kept my eyes closed for the first 25 minutes. It was just brutal. And I do not like watching brutal violence, bloodshed, people getting arrows through their skulls and muskets shot in the heart and... It doesn't do anything for me. So as much as I appreciate the filmmaking involved here and the uniqueness of the movie, if somebody's looking to go see a good, fun movie and be at all entertained, this is not the right choice.
You don't think they'll be entertained by this movie?
Because, you know, all everyone is looking for is, I heard that Leo gets raped by a bear.
Hannah, don't fall on stereotypes.
And
here.
I won't fall on stereotypes, but... It's just got a lot of really gory, gross things. And I love Leonardo DiCaprio, and I would actually be okay if he won Best Actor as a total body of work, because I think he has been ignored when he has done some phenomenal things. I think movies like Blood Diamond, Catch Me If You Can, Titanic... there's just a long list. Even J. Edgar, I thought he did a great job in that. Inception. He's done some remarkable things and just a good, solid streak of good movies. In this movie, it's sort of like when Meryl Streep won for The Iron Lady. Her performance as Margaret Thatcher was really, really good, but that movie was not. And so even though I did not particularly like The Revenant, I would not object to Leo DiCaprio finally getting some love.
The Best Actor category is not a lifetime achievement category.
It is in my book, and it could be. I think this is a tough category, too. I think there have been a lot of really good performances in a lot of big movies from, you know, Michael Fassbender as Steve Jobs. I know you like him.
He's my vote.
I know. So I...
Well, I want to talk about the authenticity for a second.
Yeah.
So directed by Alejandro González Iñárritu. He did last year's Birdman and won an Oscar for it.
Which I did not like either.
Hannah.
Sorry.
The cinematographer, Emmanuel Lubezki, he did Birdman, won an Oscar for it. The year before that, he did Gravity, won an Oscar for it. So if he won the Oscar again this year, which he probably will, that'll be three in a row for this guy. And he probably will this year because, for a couple reasons, they did things that nobody does anymore. They shot chronologically. The first scene you saw, people getting arrows through their skull, was the first scene they shot. They shot with only natural light. You only see the sun and you only see firelight. So they can shoot about a half hour during the day. The rest is spent choreographing themselves and trying to keep warm. They shot out in the snow. They don't have to act like they're cold and exhausted. They are cold and exhausted. Those beards are there for a reason, to try to keep themselves warm. And because they're not, you know, at the Holiday Inn Express where they can shave them off, they are out there in the wild. I was so impressed by the amount of work he put into this. He didn't have to do all this. He could have done a lot of this on the soundstage or with lights, and people would have been just fine with it. But he chose not to.
I don't think they would have been just fine with it. I think the fact that we hear so much about what went into the filmmaking and the authenticity and the locations and the brutal conditions makes, you know, it has made people appreciate the film more than they otherwise would have. And so I think if it had not been shot under those conditions, the buzz would not be there for this movie.
And I think the buzz is there because nobody does this anymore. No other director would go out there for 8 months and hang out in the snow.
But that doesn't make a entertaining movie.
This movie is not for grandma.
No.
But, and I think a lot of people might go see it because on a dare, you know, or they tell their buddies, yeah, I did it, I survived it. Because remember at our screening, they had health people there, nurses maybe, handing out heart monitors because they wanted to see what happens to you physically as you watch this movie. And I think a lot of that was hype, just so
people
could say,
oh,
they put
a
heart monitor on me to watch The Revenant. It's not that bad. It's sure, it's bloody, it's violent, it's gory, but it serves a purpose. The purpose is this man is a man against nature trying to survive. And I think it works. I really, really like this film. It's probably in my honorable mentions, top 15 of the year. Leonardo DiCaprio does a very good job. He doesn't have to speak a lot. It's all facial motions and expressions, and it's a good revenge tale.
It's a good revenge tale if you like a good revenge movie and if you're okay with a pretty high level of brutality and gore and some pretty gross stuff.
Well, Hannah, I think we covered a lot of ground this week. We talked about our top five worst movies, which I don't think we really had too many disagreements on, except maybe that Magic Mike XXL bit. The movies that most disappointed us. This Sunday's Golden Globes, and I think next week we might talk about our Golden Globe reactions.
Yeah, let's see what the foreign press has to say.
Oh, I bet they have a lot to say.
And what Ricky Gervais has to say, because I watch it probably more for the commentary between awards from him than
he's good. I really like him. This is his third time, I think, doing it, and he just has a way of being subversive and shocking people. Like, he can say that? Yes, of course he can say it. You know he's going to say it, and that's why you invited him.
Yeah. And so, it'll be fun to do a little recap and see what we think of the final choices.
So as a sneak peek for next week, I believe we're going to talk about Ride Along 2.
Yeah.
Did you see the original? I saw the original Ride Along.
I did. I went back to look at my review from the original, and that's one of the reasons I decided I'd go see the second. Because it was fun. It was just kind of stupid fun.
Sneak peek, I'm going because you're going, because I saw the first one, and I tore it to shreds because I hated that movie. So I think we know where we're headed next week. Just a hunch.
All right.
And next week is also Son of Saul, which everyone's talking about for best foreign film. It's Hungarian, and there's a reason why everyone's talking about it, and we'll tell you why next week. So until then, Hannah, thank you very much for coming by.
Thank you, Charlie.
And we'll see you again next week. Thank you very much.